The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
I'm Mike Consul.
And I'm Drew Campbell.
Welcome to Inside the Edition for Institutional Investing in Infrastructure for the January edition. Mr. Campbell, we finally have federal government spending. After years and years of talking about infrastructure, we have a quite serious bill. You have put together an edition that dives forthrightly into the subject matter. What's the big picture on this bill and what it says for investors?
Well, I think the big sort of takeaway from this is, one, it's a $1.2 trillion bill. It's called the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And there's $550 billion in new federal spending on transit, roads, bridges, climate resiliency, water infrastructure, clean energy, broadband, and other infrastructure investments. So it is a big chunk of money. I think the jury's still out in terms of how exactly it's all going to play out in terms of the opportunities for private investors. It's a new policy, and federal agencies are going to have to sort of absorb the policy and understand how it works, and then work with private counterparts. A lot of the money, of course, will be spent through public agencies, and so there won't be necessarily a lot of opportunities for private investment, but there certainly will be. But I think from what we've heard from, just in speaking to some of our sponsors and investment managers that we work with, it's sort of a wait and see approach in terms of exactly how and where the opportunities will materialize. There are some specifics in the bill that are encouraging. One in particular is for large projects. So these come out of federal agencies, $750 million or more. These projects are now required to do what's called a value for money analysis and consider both a public-private partnership approach. So that's a model that would use public money and private investment. And then there's the traditional procurement is often just municipal finance and grants. And so for those large,
so you're saying there is P3 written into this, at least to some degree, there's P3 written into this bill.
Yeah. In spirit, there is, so for those projects, the sponsors of those projects would have to look at both a P3 model and then a traditional procurement. So that they don't have to necessarily choose one or the other. They're free to choose how they want to, fund the project. But just going through that process of looking at a P3 will encourage public agencies to better understand that model and how it can be used. There's also money devoted to staffing public agencies with people who understand that model and understand how to work with private capital. So both of those are encouraging.
It's surprising to me that agencies don't understand that. Agencies that spend money on infrastructure don't understand P3. That it just seems like that should be very much just, front of mind. It's just something that, particularly since the government really, for so long, we've been talking about how the government is strapped. Now, of course, the federal government always has the opportunity just to print more money, which, of course, has become controversial and dangerous, potentially dangerous. And we've got investors with just trillions of dollars sitting on the sidelines that they want to commit to infrastructure. But okay, so they're going to hire some people who understand this better. Where's the education going to come from? Where are these people going to come from? The reason I ask that question is I'm wondering, do our sponsoring organizations, do the managers, the asset managers that we talk to, are they going to be brought into this process as basically providing education, or maybe even some of their people being brought on board a federal agency?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I think you'll probably see that. I don't know, you know, exactly how that's going to work, but I would imagine they will hire people who have that background and who have worked in the private sector in that capacity, which is a pretty good guess. So someone, you know, or several people coming in can bring, you know, all that experience and knowledge, and then within that agency sort of set up the P3 process. That's one good guess of how it would happen.
Is that $1.2 trillion going to be spread over X number of years, or is it one big dump in 2022?
That is a good question. I believe it's going to be spread over years. So it's not going to be one big dump. I can't imagine, you know.
It's a lot of money to spend in a single year.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to deploy that money.
It's 10 years is what.
Okay.
The policy is set up for. So
I remember when they talked about shovel ready projects when we were trying to come out of the big disaster that happened in 2007 and 8. But I don't know whether there's really such a thing as a shovel ready project. It's kind of like, you know, until we get the funding commitment, we can't really gear up and we can't get people out there in place and out there getting the work done. An investor standpoint, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, that's where I think the state and local governments come in to the picture here. I think they have a better handle on what's going on in their local areas. And so if you're talking about shovel ready projects, you know, the federal agencies aren't necessarily going to know what those are in all the localities and the states, but they are working with, you know, counterparts in states and cities for, I think, exactly that. So, and part of the bill, you know, directs money to states. So that's another piece that we have in the January issue, is just looking at state and local governments being key partners in the new infrastructure policy. So, for example, you know, Arizona is going to get $5.3 billion over 5 years for roads and bridges. And that's coming from the U.S. Department of Transportation. So at the federal level, that's going to go through down to the state level. And those dollars are being directed specifically to address congestion issues on roads and bridges. So the Department of Transportation has put out a directory for all 50 states of how much money they're getting, where it's going to be directed to. So a lot of that's going to roads and bridges. Some of that's going to ports for, you know, states that are on the coasts or inland along, you know, major rivers. So the states and the cities are big partners in this, and that's where you're going to find those quote unquote shovel ready projects. They have a good pulse. The states and cities have a pulse on.
Yeah. They know what they really, I mean, they're close to the ground. They know what they need. You know, from an investor standpoint, how do investors make money on this in terms of, I'm thinking, you know, toll roads or water systems that they would actually operate? What about that? Is because, you know, there's roads departments and states and cities and so on. And I don't know how often they actually will mete out money to a private contractor, but that's just a one-time thing. It's just, okay, we repave the road, or we build a new exit or what have you.
Yeah.
Obviously, investors are interested in something that's much more abiding than that, something that over the course of 20 or 40 years, they're going to operate and make money.
Well, I would say, I mean, the value for money provision that's in the infrastructure bill on large projects. That would be one area where private investors, you know, an obvious area where private investors can potentially invest in projects. So, and that would include, you know, there's some examples of that are road projects and toll lanes. So you'll have a highway and a lot of the lanes are not tolled, but you can add toll lanes to it. So a lot of private investment managers have done that in the United States. So I imagine that would be one area where private money can get invested. And then from what we've heard, a lot of this is just going to have to play out. So, you know, agencies and state and local agencies at the federal level, they're going to have to understand how the policy works and then create programs that encourage investment in different ways. And private capital will be part of that.
Yeah, are airports and seaports being funded in a big way in this bill? Because we hear all the time, and we're seeing this with the supply chain problems, that our ports are not as modern as a lot of foreign ports. And people complain that our airports, some of them anyway, you fly into and you feel like you're in a third world country. I think that's probably an overstatement, but clearly we could do better on the modernization of our ports, airports and seaports. How big a commitment is being made there?
So there's definitely money for airports and seaports. I don't have those exact figures off the top of my head, but they are definitely a part of it. I can give you one example. In Texas, there's money directly, $1.2 billion for airports has been directed to Texas. That's a good example. It's there. It's just, you know, there's 50 states and
a lot of money to be spread around. You're saying 1.2 billion just made me think. I may have said earlier 1.2 billion is 1.2 trillion. And I think I may not have said trillion, but billion earlier.
Yeah, the total bill is 1.2 trillion. So for Texas, there's 1.2 billion for airports over 5 years.
Okay. So. Now, how much of, I don't know if you could answer this, Drew, but I'm curious, if you were to look at the ratio or percentage, how much of this is taking existing infrastructure and upgrading it versus building new infrastructure? Because, you know, one of the things, we may have talked about this in the past, when we build new infrastructure, it just means that's more infrastructure. We have a lot of infrastructure in this country. And if we add new infrastructure, it just means that's more that we have to continue to maintain. And it gets more and more expensive as we go along. So is there a lot of new infrastructure here, or is there a real emphasis on upgrading what we've got?
It's going to be a mix of both. So, you know, there is definitely a need to upgrade existing infrastructure. A lot of, you know, states and cities have not done the maintenance over the years. And that's part of the reason that private capital needs to be part of the mix as well. And public-private partnerships and just innovative financing models, because those approaches look at the whole life cycle of an infrastructure asset. So the way that the infrastructure is procured in the United States, we use municipal financing. And a lot of it is just to build the infrastructure, but maintaining it and operating it for its full life, which is often, you know, 40, 50 years, does not get entirely captured in state and local budgets. And so there is a need for repairing and upgrading existing infrastructure. But then again, there's also a need to build new infrastructure to make it climate resilient. So that's a big part of the bill as well. So, for example, there's $47 billion directed to climate resilience projects. And then there's also the electric grid needs to be upgraded.
For sure.
So, and there's $65 billion to repair and build new transmission lines for renewable power and nuclear. So there's a mix of both, you know, upgrading existing and then building new infrastructure.
Such as broadband. I would imagine broadband, there's lots of new, I mean, we want to expand broadband. We don't want to expand internet access, although that's being done by the private sector as well. You've got Elon Musk, and he's not the only one who wants to put up, I don't know, 20,000 satellites and have global internet access, which would be phenomenal. I don't know how long that's going to take and how fast internet can be from that's satellite communications.
That's part of it too. So a lot of this money, I think I said in the beginning that a lot of this money will flow through public agencies, and it will just be, you know, public Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation's or public works programs that are going to be investing that money. So private capital won't be a part of that necessarily. Another piece to that is that a lot of this money will flow through to corporations. So you mentioned broadband. So, you know, AT&T and Comcast will, you know, get a piece of that money to build out broadband. And so that's not necessarily where investment managers with infrastructure funds will play a role.
Right. So, you've got, I know that you had a meeting with your editorial advisory board for the magazine. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, is there anything else on the bill you wanted to mention, or was the discussion with the board, did that revolve around this whole, the whole infrastructure bill?
You know, we had some discussion about the infrastructure bill, but a lot of that was, a lot of the sentiment was this bill has to, you know, it will take time to figure out exactly where the opportunities are for private investment, and they have to see what the public sector does with the bill. So right out of the gate, I don't think anyone's anticipating big opportunities, save for that value for money on the big projects. That might be one of the first places where private capital can see opportunities. So one other piece that we have in the January issue is a shop talk with Michael Albrecht of Ridgewood Infrastructure. And it touches on the infrastructure bill that just passed and then the Build Back Better policy that's also making its way through Congress. So there is discussion of that in the January issue. And again, an infrastructure manager like Ridgewood has a track record of working with government. And so that would be, you know, there's some managers, private managers that are already in the public, working with public agencies. And so they might have a better sort of view on where the opportunities might be. And so we have a shop talk about that in the January issue. Mm-hmm. So in the board meeting, we touched on it a little bit, but again, a lot of the discussion at the board meeting had to do with the energy transition and digital infrastructure and the amount of capital that's going to infrastructure. And, you know, the board meeting really focuses on investment managers managing institutional capital. So pension plan capital, insurance companies, and sovereign wealth funds. You know, the relationship between the managers and the investors trying to meet their target allocations for infrastructure investing. And, you know, how infrastructure, the role that infrastructure plays in an investor's portfolio. So one of the topics that was really discussed was inflation at the board meeting, because right now inflation's really spiking. And part of that has to do with, you know, the COVID pandemic and coming out of it and pent up demand. Part of it has to do with energy prices and the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. So that was a big part of the discussion at the board meeting. And that's discussed in a feature article in the January issue as well.
What was the vibe at the board meeting? You know, we're coming out of these two dreadful years of the pandemic, and Omicron is obviously, you know, sweeping the world, but it appears to be mild, and it appears to be something that isn't going to that's going to come and go, and future variants. It appears now. My understanding is, as each new variant comes along, it's actually weaker than his predecessor. But I'm no biologist, so I don't know. But what I'm leading up to is just: was the vibe at the board meeting? Was there optimism? Was there cautious optimism? Were spirits high? And also, was this a live meeting, or was this done virtually?
So this was a live meeting. It was our first i3 board meeting since 2019. So we did a virtual meeting in 2020. So I would say the vibe was, I would say optimistic. There was a little bit of caution, but I really sensed that people were, you know, encouraged that we had put together an in-person meeting. And we had people come from as far as Australia and Europe to California to be there. And so, you know, the sense I had was that people want to be at face-to-face meetings again. And there's just no substitute for, you know, being with people for 2 to 3 days in meetings, at dinners, at networking events, and just discussing, you know, what's going on in the market, their experiences, and just, you know, building relationships that way. And so the vibe, I would say, was optimistic and positive at the board meeting.
How much of that do you think has to do with the Biden administration and Congress getting this bill enacted? Was that part of the optimism that they felt like, wow, we finally have got this? We're going to be getting these very large tranches of money, not necessarily all going to the private sector for their play in it. But was that a big part of it, or was it simply the matter of we see the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the pandemic and the world can get back to normal business?
I would say it was a mix of both. I think probably more so towards the, you know, the ending of the pandemic and trying to get back to business as usual. But the infrastructure bill itself is, you know, a positive. And it's, I guess, in the sense that a rising tide will lift all boats. There's going to be a lot of money going to infrastructure. And private investors, you know, there's companies that invest in the hard assets of infrastructure, roads and bridges. And then there's companies that service those assets. And a lot of the discussion was that there's these service companies that are also going to get a lot of money. And those service companies, sometimes those turn into infrastructure like assets or investments. And so there's this, and this happens, you know, a lot in the market, and just pretty much always in the market, there's money always coming in to make investments in infrastructure. There's only a limited amount of investments that can be made, and investment managers, you know, sort of earn their keep by finding those new sort of areas of the market, where they can make good returns. And so right now there's so much money coming into infrastructure and the energy transition and the digital transition. A lot of that's going to go towards company, sort of startup companies that are more private equity or venture capital, that in the early stages of their growth, they're not necessarily going to be what's sort of a classic infrastructure investment, which a lot of our investors are looking for some, you know, growth on their investment, some capital appreciation, but they're also looking for income. These younger companies are going to be very growth oriented. And so what we were hearing at the board meeting is that those companies that are going to get probably a lot of money from this infrastructure bill might not be ready to be in an infrastructure portfolio right now, but maybe in 3 to 5 years. So, you know, back to the optimism and why it's there. Yes, the infrastructure bill itself is cause for some of that optimism too.
Terrific. Well, exciting times ahead, Drew. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the report. We'll catch up with you next month.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.